her auntie Griselda. She says she knows my kind, she might maybe so. Oh yeah, she's raised you right, your auntie Griselda. You only know the things she wants you to know. I know she's having a fit, she doesn't like me a bit. No bird of grace ever lit on auntie Griselda.
Love was only true in fairy tales, and for someone else, but not for me. Our love was out to get me, that's the way it seemed. Disappointment haunted all my dreams. Then I saw her face, now I'm a believer. I'm not your stepping stone. I'm not your stepping stone. You're trying to make your mark in society. You're using all the tricks that you used on me. You're reading all them high fashion magazines. The clothes you're wearing, girl, are causing public scenes. I said, I'm not your stepping stones.
And we, as you all know, we're all Monkees fans here at PNP Network, and we've had Davy Jones on the show, we've had Mickey Dolenz on the show, and now joining us is Peter Tork, who played guitar with the group, and I'm a huge Monkees fan, and I am very excited about what Rhino has released with season one and two on DVD, and especially what they did with the first and second albums.
Is that a question?
Well, no, it's a comment. How are you? Welcome to the program.
These are the jokes, Mark. Hang with me. I'll be doing these all day in the interview.
Okay. Well, I'll prepare for them then.
Good, please. I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
All right. What do you think about the sets that Rhino put out?
I actually have not paid much attention to the current reissue. It looks good, but you know, I know the songs, Mark. So I'm very gratified, of course, that they have seen fit to put out those CDs. It's a testament to that, to the power of the Monkees project, which actually, to tell you the truth, is surprising to me. As a private person, if you had said to me, what are the chances that the Monkees will have any significant impact past, you know, 3 to 5 years, I would have thought they were slim. And yet here it is 40 years later. I certainly wouldn't have put us in the same category of entertainment icons as others who have survived as long as this. I mean, you know, Ella Fitzgerald will never die, but I didn't think you shouldn't never going to get me to say that the Monkees are as are an equivalent to Ella Fitzgerald on any stage, except maybe in appeal. Maybe there's something about the Monkees that is just gets people, and it's amazing. And of course it's wonderful. I'm delighted about it personally, just, you know, because I was a part of that project. But in terms of the power of the project, I never would have guessed.
Well, if you think about it, you guys were only together for a couple of years, but the songs endure. And the thing that's incredible, you know, you'd think that people like myself, who actually, my first album I ever bought was the Monkees album. You'd think that people like me would be the fans. But then it was when you guys re-involved yourselves in 86 and you joined the group again. And that was then, this was now became a hit, and a whole new generation through MTV became fans of the Monkees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a... I think we're one of the very few showbiz acts ever to have a charted hit 20 years after their initial hit. I don't certainly with any group with as long a break in between as we had. I mean, I suppose Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby charted for 20 years, no problem. But to go as a you know, pop phenomenon bursting on the scene with all the power behind the Monkees, and then to just, you know, quietly fade away as we did, and then to come back, that's almost unique as far as I know.
It is. And it would be like NSYNC or Backstreet Boys having a hit in 20 years, you know?
Wouldn't that be amazing? Can you imagine that?
I can't.
The Backstreet Geezers, I don't imagine it's likely, but who knows? I mean, one thing I've learned The one thing I'm sure that I know is you don't know nothing.
That's true.
So how are you, Mark?
I'm doing okay. I get lots of questions for you. One of them, of course, was I didn't realize this. Of course, you know, the Monkees kind of, you know, went in oblivion after a couple of years. I didn't realize that you were actually the first to quit the group. Why was that in the first place that you left?
All my life, from the time that I was able to know what it was I wanted to do, it's been about entertainment and primarily through music. And my experiences in groups convinced me that that's where I long to be, is actually a member of a group whose dedication was to the group's fortunes as we saw, and mainly through music. If you ask me what the strengths of the Monkees were, of course, the clowning, the showbiz, the acting. Was a terribly strong point, and certainly the front part, that was the initial thing that the producers did. But the music was really critical to the success, finally, of the Monkees, and overall as a project. And the Monkees, the four of us as the Monkees, got together in a studio and made an album. The third album of the Monkees series is the four of us making an album together. Unlike the first two, and the later ones too, for that matter, although the later ones were kind of a mixed bag situation. But a lot of people know that the first couple of albums were made by professional record makers using professional musicians, and that often the only participant on the record was the lead singer. And that was very difficult for me, particularly at the time. I have to say, nowadays, I understand perfectly. These guys were making a TV show, and we didn't know how to make hit records, and we barely knew how to act in front of a camera, much less make a TV series. And it was important that the records get out, and I really do understand today. But at the time, it was very difficult for me because I thought I was a musician, and these guys were just shining me on. And when we got around to making the album together, the four of us, I was in my bliss. That's exactly where I wanted to be. And as time evolved, the other guys became uninterested in the process. And so I went off to do more of it in the way I wanted to. I wanted to be in groups and play music together. And that's what I've been pretty much doing ever since, with a few notable exceptions.
What was it like, though, when you reformed? I know you reformed another group right after that. I think it was called Release. And obviously, it's, you know, once you've achieved the amazing success the Monkees did, it's really hard to get back up to that plateau again with a new group.
Well, I had no expectations one way or the other. I almost never do, as a matter of fact. I'm very much a roll with the flow kind of a guy. For better or for worse, you know, it's got its advantages and its disadvantages. One of the advantages is that when you get together with a new bunch of people and you're having a good time making music, you do not fret because you're unlikely to achieve the same success. And I didn't. I won't say I didn't care, but it wasn't a factor in my enjoyment. It didn't detract from my enjoyment of the moment, which was that I was playing music with these people and having a great time. And that's all I ever wanted, you know. Of course you want to make money and achieve some connection as an entertainer. It's validating. It makes you feel like you have an idea of what you're doing in the human race. But the most important thing was the enjoyment of the process.
Mm. But I guess that there was at some point some frustration that entered your life, because I know that you had some problems with chemicals and things. And
I did. But you know, I have to clear up a misconception. The problem I had with chemicals did not have anything to do, well, I should say I'm sure that it didn't have anything to do with the frustrations. I did react to some frustrations at some point. But, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not drinking these days, and way the better off for it. But my experience and that of some other alcoholics I talked to indicates to me that an alcoholic is a person who has a condition, a syndrome, like Tourette's syndrome or polio or something, and that no matter how the stresses and frustrations may affect it somewhat, the basic condition is inherent. I could have led a perfectly serene life and still been an alcoholic.
Well, you are an alcoholic. If you are one, you always are, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's always a constant battle. Were you drinking a lot when the band was successful?
Only a little in those days. My progression is very slow. But you know, it isn't a constant battle, I'm happy to say. Thank God, really. It requires consistent attention. But battle is way too big a word for it. I attend to the situation. It's like it's almost on the order of a diabetic who has to inject him or herself once or twice a day and then goes about her life. And that's much more like what it is. I pay attention, I take care, I do a few little odds and ends, a little chores, a few housekeeping regarding my situation, my condition, but then it's not a battle after that, I'm delighted to say, because I couldn't win that battle. In fact, that was exactly the problem. As an alcoholic, you can't win the battle. You have to find another way.
Mm. Now, this says that, I'm reading your biography, it says that in 76 you reunited with Davey and Mickey for a Christmas single, which... I don't remember. I guess that one wasn't released all over the country, huh?
No, it was really. Our producer was anxious to to get us started, and he had a budget and made the single and released it under his own label. It didn't go very far. Although you can still get bootlegs, and obviously you can. It's on the bootleg websites, and you know you can hear it if you like. One of them is the backside of Jonesy singing "White Christmas." He kills. God, he's great. And the other is a song that Chip Douglas brought to us and asked us to do, so we were happy to oblige.
Hmm. Yeah, I will probably have people running to iTunes to try to find that. I assume it's around somewhere. They probably can even buy it if they want to.
I'm sure they can. I'm sure somebody's got, although I don't know how many copies were actually made, but the digital file has got to be running around there in cyberspace someplace.
You would think that Rhino would have got a hold of that and put it on that collection, but I don't think they did.
Not a bad thought. Maybe I'll bring it up next time I talk to them. Although all the guys at Rhino that I knew are gone. They're a different company over there. Yeah. Mercifully, they're still enthusiastic about the Monkees, which is hence the 40th anniversary release of the CD release.
And the DVDs too. It's really kind of fun, Peter, when you're watching season one and season two on these DVDs, because it at least for me, it brings me back to the 60s, and I'm sure for you, if you're watching it, it brings you back to those times you were doing it.
Well, sometimes it does, yeah. And a lot of the times when I watch the shows, what I'm more interested in is, oh, look, there's David Pearl over there back there, and there's that wonderful woman that I dated. Oh, what's her name that I loved so much, you know? And the life, the backstage life on the set was very much part of what I loved about being in the Monkees. And there were other things too. One of the wonderful things is that the visuals nowadays on the DVD are better than they ever were. I never saw them so good as they show up nowadays, looking at the old DVDs. And the other thing is, the show was pretty funny sometimes. I sat down with my brother, we were watching a couple episodes, and we laughed right out loud. It was really wonderful.
I had the show on, and my daughter, who's 12 years old, walked in the room, and she was laughing. She said, "It's kind of stupid, huh, Dad?" I said, "Yeah, it was kind of stupid funny, you know? That was the way it was."
There's a lot of that stupid funny, you know. I mean, we'll take a laugh any way we can get it. I'm still that way.
You know, I remember in 1986 when you guys reformed, you and Davey and Mickey, and did the 20th anniversary tour, and that was when This Is Now came out. What was that like coming back together again and touring? And why didn't your other Mr. Nesmith join the tour?
Well, you haven't talked to him yet. After that, I have my surmises, I have my guesses, but I don't know why he wouldn't join us. He certainly had was very much engaged in a world of his own. He was running an office, a shop called Pacific Arts. I think he may even still have it.
Yeah.
Although he may have shut it down once or twice, I think. Anyway, he sees himself as a businessman and an entrepreneur, an entertainer, entrepreneur, I think he's got some ambiguity about having been in the Monkees. I think for him, being a member of the Monkees was a mixed mark at best. He appreciated the notoriety, the attention it got him, the name it gave him, and I think he didn't feel much like acting the clown quite. The rest of us didn't care, you know. We're okay clowning, and sometimes Michael could clown really well. I mean, if you've ever seen the best episode of the Monkees for me was the what we called the fairy tale episode, wherein Michael played the princess. And he was fabulous. Did you see that episode?
I remember that episode. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely wonderful. There was nothing between him and his commitment to being the princess. Mm-hmm. It was just wonderful. And yet, sometimes I think he's got ideas about his dignity. But again, these are only just guesses. So, and he did join us in the UK. We did in the 90s, we did a tour of the UK with the four of us as the original band, just the four of us playing together. And we started off the show. We did like an hour and 10 or hour and 15 minute set. And the first 20 to 30 minutes were just the four of us up there on stage, just like in the old days. Then we would do solo sections, and then a band would come out and we would do the production numbers, Daydream Believer and, you know, some of, Listen to the Band, the bigger numbers that we got into later. But we played as a band back then, and Michael did join us. We had a good time.
I remember about 10 years ago, you did an album called Stranger Things Have Happened. I think he was on there as well.
That's right. He sang, and as did Ricky. They sang on it. So, incidentally, did Mama Cass's daughter and Papa John Phillips's daughter, Owen Elliott and Mackenzie Phillips, who is, as everybody, some people know, was on the TV show. The name escapes me. But she was a regular actress on that show. And the
One Day at a Time.
That's it. And the two of us sang... And the two of them sang backups for me on one of my songs, and it sounds like the Mamas and the Papas. Owen has Cass's voice. It's really thrilling.
Wow. Yeah, and unfortunately, I haven't heard much of Owen.
No, she made a brief stab at being a singer full-time and found herself distracted and onto other things. And she doesn't do it full-time anymore. I think she sings backgrounds. I think she'll sing if you ask her, but she's not pursuing a career.
I remember when the Mamas and Papas regrouped and Cassell and Spanky McFarlane took Cass's spot.
Yes, and Scott McKenzie,
right,
after whom McKenzie Phillips was named, took over Denny's spot. And let's see. And John, Papa John, was there.
Yeah.
Who played Michelle? I can't remember who. Oh, Mackenzie.
Yeah, Mackenzie was in the group. That's right. Yeah.
Michelle's role.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a regrouping of a group that could be said to be authentic with only one of the original members remaining. It was that one. Mm. That was about regrouping I've ever heard. Spanky McFarlane is a fabulous singer and really pretty much in a league with Cass. I'm not sure she's as good. That's just a matter of taste.
Yeah, she's great, and we had her on the show. She's a wonderful human being as well.
Yeah. A lot of fun and very warm human being. I've always liked her. I haven't run across her in years. So if you talk to her before I do, tell her I said hi, won't you?
I will. And now, talking about progenies, I know you have a few children of your own. Any of them following in the music realm?
My son is studying music and photography right now at Columbia. Bless his heart. The family is, you know, we're really busting with pride that he's gotten himself into Columbia. He wants to combine the two somehow, and his musical interest is in Brazilian samba, and he plays guitar, and he's very good, and I have no sense I haven't got any sense that he's pursuing a career that way or what it would be. He graduates this summer, so we'll find out after that. My daughter, who is a full-time middle school teacher in New York City, also has a little two-woman band, a very little tacky band with an accordion and I don't know what else, and they sing monkey songs. And I guess they go out once a month and play in little clubs. Very independent, very, very offbeat, very, very, very indie.
And how about your little girl, Erica?
I have a little girl, Erica, and she is very musical. She's taking up the flute.
And there you that's go. All we... My daughter also plays the flute. I'm not sure what that leads to, but who knows?
It seems to be the instrument she wants to play. There's not much room in pop music for the flute, other than Ian Anderson.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's been done once or twice, and who knows? Maybe she'll find a happy life in the pit of a Broadway show band, or maybe she'll be orchestral, or maybe she'll go the classical route. I have no idea yet.
So, and, are you folks actually doing any touring, any extra promotion for this 40th anniversary thing? I know that they've released a lot of product. Are you actually guys? Are you going on the road at all?
The Monkees are not regrouping. I have a group of my own, Peter Tork and Shoe Suede Blues.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on PeterTork.com, you can download and play three high-res full-length copies of MP3s of the of some of the stuff on our last CD. A new one is coming out, and we're touring. We just did Springfield. We're going to a little town in Massachusetts called Maynard. Going down to near Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, between Harrisburg and Bethlehem, and we're going to the UK early next year. So we're working really hard, as hard as we can. And if somebody came to me with an offer to rejoin the Monkees, I would have to consider very, very long and hard before I took a leave of absence from the Shoe Suede Blues.
Now, do you play any Monkees tunes with this band?
Yes, we do. We do a wonderful, slinky, slopey version of Last Train to Clarksville that I really engage you. We have to do a few. I mean, I can't. Can you see going to Paul McCartney and not having him do a few Beatles tunes? You'd be so disappointed. And I don't know that anybody has the same investment in me, but I do. I'm a believer, daydream believer. Griselda.
I was going to say Griselda. That's the one that when I think of you singing, that's the one I always think of.
Yeah, that's the one I sang, and finally Stepping Stone to close it off, because it's a real rabble rouser of a song when you lay it on them thick, and we're happy to lay it on them thick. It's part of what we do as a band, we think.
Do you ever talk to each other? I mean, are you in communication with any of the guys in the group?
If we have to be, we don't have much in common anymore, to tell you the truth. Occasionally, I'll have a technical question that I'll talk to Mickey about, and Mickey's and my paths crossed not too long ago, and he invited me up on stage to do a couple of numbers to say hi with. We did For Pete's Sake, which is also going to be on the new CD, which is a song I wrote that is on the credits. It rolls over the credits at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, and then I did my version of Little Richard's Lucille, which the band knew, and it was a great meeting. I had a great hug and some warm conversation, but very cordial. And his sister, whom I love, and his wife, whom I like a whole lot. Can't say love his wife, but those two women are friends of mine, and we had a great time. I had a great time hanging out with those people. But like I said, we don't have a whole lot in common beyond our history, which is history. So if there's something technical, I talk to him. If something comes up, we communicate. And same with Davey. Michael and I have not communicated. I haven't heard from him since that UK tour.
Wow. Well, he's a pioneer in the video industry, and
that's keeping from getting picking up the phone right there.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you one. You just mentioned about a new CD. When is that coming out?
Probably first thing. Well, probably about this time next month, or early next month. We hope. We hope it's out in time for you to order it up and send it to your friends for Christmas, your children. It's blues and blues based pop rock. We've got a foot in each of three areas there. We get standing ovations from the seated crowds. We're really we're pleased with ourselves. We think we might be good. Like I said, we're going to the UK and Sweden, and Europe early next year. So we're actually very hopeful for this band.
Well, we're going to put up this interview along with a link to PeterTork.com. So folks can go to the site and find out what's going on. And if you have the CD out, they can order it there, right?
That's right. It'll be out pretty soon. I think we're going to put up pre-orders because I think we really want everybody so we can mail it directly to the giftee for Christmas. We'll maybe even gift wrap it ourselves.
It's a good idea, and maybe you can get some upfront cash to help pay for everything. So that's a good thing, too.
What a concept! I never thought of that.
Well, Peter, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and we wish you lots of luck with the new CD, and maybe we'll have you on again to talk about it.
I would very much appreciate the chance, and it's been a pleasure to talk to you too, Mark, and good luck to you.
You too, Peter. Take care. Bye.
Okay.